It's a great pleasure to welcome you to another episode of Across the Pond, where we discuss the big stories and top investment ideas from the Eurozone and Switzerland. Geopolitical developments in 2025 set a high bar for global uncertainty, with US tariffs reaching their highest level in a century, a US bombing of Iran, and a widening gap between the US and Europe over how to end the Russia-Ukraine war. But 2026 is proving equally eventful. First, with the US intervention in Venezuela, and most recently, the war between the US and Iran. Trade uncertainty has also returned after the Supreme Court severely curtailed President Trump's authority to impose tariffs, with the administration now trying to rebuild its tariff wall in other ways. So what does this mean for investors? I'm Christopher Swan.
And I'm Belinda Peters. At the UBS Chief Investment Office, we've often pointed out that geopolitical crises often have only a fleeting negative impact on markets. This pattern will be tested again as investors react to the US-Israeli airstrikes on Iran. Today, we'll explore what the latest historic developments signify. We are joined by the CIO's two top geopolitical analysts, Dirk Effenberger, the head of investment risk, and Kurt Ryman, head of U.S. fixed income, and our expert on U.S. and global politics. Thanks for joining us, Dirk and Kurt.
It's great to be with you.
Yeah, let's start off with obviously the most pressing global issue at the moment, the conflict between the US, Israel and Iran. So talk us maybe, Dirk, through the latest developments and how markets have been reacting so far.
Yeah, thanks for having me, first of all. Yeah, we had been seeing a buildup of US military in the region already. So military strikes had already been part of our base case. But nonetheless, pretty extremely dramatic moves, I would say. And the worry would be if it becomes a prolonged conflict that then leads to disruption to energy supply, so lowering growth and pushing up global inflation as well. At the moment, we are in an uncertain period, I would say, in which Iran has retaliated with attacks throughout the region. And the Strait of Hormuz is effectively closed. And as you probably know, the Strait of Hormuz is effectively closed, and it has around one-fifth of oil goes through this route. That's very important. And this has been reflected in plenty of turbulence in global markets, with oil prices moving up at the time of writing. It's about 15% compared to last Friday. That's actually the biggest two-day jump for oil prices since the pandemic recovery in 2020. And gas prices are up to 70% at the time of writing, especially relevant for Europe. So European and Asian equities are down because both regions actually rely on natural gas. US equity markets are also down, but less so than their European and Asian peers.
And what scenarios could we possibly expect going forward? Could you maybe talk us through our base case for how this conflict could potentially develop?
Yeah, sure. So our base case is that there will be a disruption to the global supply of energy. The critical question is, however, how long this will last. Essentially, we have a few main reasons to believe that this conflict should last not more than 4 weeks. So first of all, Iran's military capability is being degraded at a very rapid pace. And then I think it's also secondly important to keep in mind that U.S. domestic politics come into play here as well. It's quite obvious that the U.S. voters don't like to be involved in foreign wars, so I think Trump has to take this into account as well. We expect the current spike in the price of oil to reverse, at least partially, once it becomes clearer that the transit disruptions are likely to prove temporary, and then also B, that most critical oil infrastructure remains in place and the military action actually fades. So markets may prove volatile over coming weeks, but would likely thereafter start to refocus on positive global economic fundamentals. So this would be in line with the impact of most geopolitical shocks we have actually seen in the recent past.
And yeah, you're touching on that issue of the history of geopolitical shocks, but obviously we can't afford to be complacent, and there are risk cases here. Maybe talk us through some of the things that could potentially go wrong and what our risk scenario is.
Yeah, you're right. So history provides some guidance, but it certainly does not always play out the same way. So our risk case would see a more sustained disruption to the production and or the flow of energy from the region, with higher energy prices for longer, and then beginning to have a bigger impact on global economy and also global markets. So such a negative outcome is more comparable to what followed the Yom Kippur War in 1973, and also what followed the start of the Russian war, Russian-Ukraine war in 2022. Yeah, in my view, the best defense against potential risk is, well, something very simple but sometimes hard to do given behavioral biases, and that is diversification across regions, sectors, and asset classes. So right now, I think investors with concentrated exposure should use this environment as an opportunity to diversify, for example, favoring US sectors like industrials, banks, and so on. Gold is still a very good diversifier during times of market stress, even though gold price has fallen somewhat yesterday. But overall, we remain positive on gold.
Okay, and our key focus in this podcast is mainly Europe. So maybe we can laser in a bit on how this all impacts European markets. One important point here is energy costs, and Europe is more reliant on imported energy than the US. So given that we have an upbeat view on the cyclical economic outlook for Europe and the region's equities, how concerned should investors really be?
Yeah, European gas prices have surged due to the disruption in Qatar's LNG production. That's very important. Europe is actually more reliant on imported energy than the US, making it somewhat more sensitive to supply shocks and price volatility. However, I would say the current price spike is modest compared to 2022, when prices actually increased tenfold after the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Also, Europe's dependence on Qatar LNG is relatively limited, about 10% of LNG imports. So some countries such as Italy are a bit more exposed. So the inflationary impact is likely to be smaller than in 2022, as today's disruptions come during a period of disinflation, not a post-pandemic shock like back then. Admittedly, energy price volatility is a headwind for Europe's cyclical outlook, but the current spike is less severe and Europe's energy diversification has also improved since 2022. It's bad news overall, but only if sustained would it have a significant impact in my view. And also keep in mind that we are now heading into the spring-summer period, which is different from 2022 as well.
And turning to you, Kurt, you've been making the point that on a range of geopolitical issues, the U.S. Political backdrop could also be important. So how do you think the midterm elections influence how we think the Trump administration will be viewing international issues over coming months and perhaps also into the next year?
Yeah, thanks, Belinda. I would say first, just to define what midterm elections are in case some of your listeners aren't familiar, but this is the time when all 435 seats in the House of Representatives and one third of the Senate are up for election. And that happens in November. This is the election when it's not the president that's on the ballot. And that's important because we've seen that when President Trump is on the ballot, it affects turnout, much more enthusiasm among Republican voters. And in the intervening years, the 2026 election, for example, we may see that turnout shift in favor of the Democrats. It's interesting. Yesterday, there were primary elections held in the state of Texas, meaning choosing who gets on the ballot. And there was quite strong Democratic turnout. So anyway, but then looking at the, you know, the makeup of Congress and the effect of this on geopolitics, right now, Republicans hold narrow majorities in both chambers. However, low presidential approval ratings threaten their unified control of government. Oftentimes, the midterm elections are what we would call a referendum on the president. And typically, the party in power loses seats in the House. So loss of the House or the Senate would fundamentally change the power dynamics in Washington, D.C. And when we think about the platform that the president and the current administration effectively ran on, it was one of America first. and policies that would help to bring down inflation. If we look at some of the signature policies so far, tariffs, and then now the Iran conflict and the resulting oil supply shock that Dirk referenced, these would have the effect of lifting prices and making the inflation problem worse, not better. Now, there's 8 months to go until November, so lots of time for the administration to act to address affordability concerns, but prolonged higher oil prices would make gasoline more expensive, and the resulting inflation could even spill over into higher bond yields, raising the cost of credit for home buyers and consumers. So, the administration's going to face pressure from Democrats and from isolationists within the Republican Party to not become embroiled in this conflict. But we're seeing that the administration is also unlikely to declare victory before it's achieved either or both of a severe degradation of Iran's military capabilities and an Iranian leadership that's going to accept the terms of a stricter nuclear and ballistic missile deal. And then on the tariff front, that's been, as we've been talking about, very much in the news. The administration has less latitude to adjust tariff rates after the Supreme Court's decision to block the what we call the IEEPA tariffs. These are the ones related to what's allegedly international economic emergencies. The tariff rate has declined more for Europe and Asia than elsewhere, and that potentially could give some relief to exporters and U.S. consumers. So, to your question, I think that the midterm elections have the effect of, in a way, limiting or constraining the interruption on the global stage that has been very much the hallmark of the first year of the second Trump administration.
Thanks for that, Kurt. I mean, so you've been talking a little bit about the impact of U.S. foreign policy domestically, but maybe you can sort of look abroad. I mean, obviously, the Trump foreign policy has represented quite a significant departure from predecessors in a range of areas, issues like sort of the appreciation of multilateral institutions, maybe the alliance with Europe, confidence in NATO and free trade, as you were mentioning. How do you see European nations, European countries responding to some of these shifts?
Absolutely correct, Chris. This America First agenda prioritizes U.S. strategic interests over multilateralism and international economic and security frameworks. You're absolutely right. This second Trump administration's foreign policy is a stark departure from what you could call the post-World War II international order. And it's on a range of dimensions, trade, security, competitiveness. And it will have, as you rightly point out, a particularly important implication for Europe. We've already had flare-ups over Greenland, Ukraine, and now most recently Spain on the kind of a combination of the tariffs and defense spending, and also the conflict in Iran. On defense, the administration has stressed that NATO countries should spend the same amount in proportion to the size of their economies on defense. This was not the case before President Trump emphasized the issue, but most are now on track to meet their share. And of course, additional defense spending is going to weigh on the sustainability of fiscal balances or government budgets. But it does have the benefit of boosting economic growth. And that's something that we're seeing play out in Europe. On trade, it's also the case that this liberal rules-based consensus on globalization no longer works when countries don't play by the rules. And in particular, the U.S. is aiming to contain overproduction from China. But it can't do this alone. These record Chinese trade surpluses are just as much an issue for Europe's long-term growth strategy as they are for the U.S. So there may be room for cooperation on trying to contain China's export-led growth strategy. And then, as a consequence of this, the U.S. is likely to prioritize and has been prioritizing a national industrial policy, such as it has with semiconductors, steel, aluminum, cars, even now shipbuilding. And the point of all this is to restore or reshore production and harden supply chains. Some of this may come at the expense of Europe. And then, you know, lastly, Chris, on the positive side, I would say that President Trump may prove to be one of the single greatest forces behind a more cohesive Europe. And it may even force Europe to come to terms with longstanding capital market or innovation or competitiveness challenges. So I agree. This is a stark departure. It does have implications for Europe. Some of them are potentially negative. Some of them are positive. And it's something that we'll continue to monitor and assess. And I think most recently, this flare-up with Spain over the Iran conflict is just another test of both that transatlantic relationship, but also the cohesiveness within Europe on foreign affairs.
And maybe we can take a closer look at the defense sector, Dirk, especially from a European perspective. How do we see all of these developments impacting the sector?
Yeah, I think U.S. foreign policy shifts have actually already been contributing to the tailwinds for defense. European nations have increasingly become persuaded of the need for a greater degree of independence from the U.S. So we have already seen an effect on the global defense market from various conflicts, right? Supplies of munitions in Europe have been diverted to Ukraine, so they need to rebuild inventories. A variety of European munition makers also supply the global market, including to the US and the Middle East. So the airstrikes on Iran also contribute to a very tight global market. And this also comes after airstrikes on Venezuela just a couple of weeks ago. This all adds up to the demand. On a broader level, I would say we are seeing global demand, especially in Europe, for military build-up. That is a tailwind for Europe's diversified suppliers, companies offering a broad range of products and services, including missiles, armored vehicles, warships, aircraft, etc. And we, in general, favor innovation-driven subsectors such as those focused on drones, space technology, and also cybersecurity.
And thinking about like the broader picture beyond defense, I mean, obviously, some of these geopolitical developments are also impacting other industries. And I guess I'm thinking about industrials and infrastructure, particularly in a world of heightened geopolitical tensions and to some degree of fragmentation.
Yeah, that's quite right, Chris. So first, the fiscal package that Germany approved last year also included infrastructure. You need to upgrade the network here in order to ensure that military equipment can be moved to where it's needed. We certainly see beneficiaries here in Europe. But we can think about this more broadly too. If we are entering a period of heightened geopolitical risk and one in which supply chains are more vulnerable, then it adds to the impetus for companies and governments to source nearer to home or bring production back home. This trend is very positive for the industrial sector in Europe, I would say, in terms of building new facilities, for example, but also in terms of automation and robotics, which are important in a region with very high labor costs. So there are a lot of options here for investors.
Maybe to wrap up for our final question, I would like to look forward a bit. We're only a few months into 2026, but what will be the key geopolitical issues investors should be on the alert for outside of the Middle East and trade for 2026? And this is a question for both of you.
Well, what a year so far in terms of geopolitics, right? Venezuela, Greenland, now Iran. So my expectation would be that the U.S. administration actually backs away from these external conflicts and focuses more heavily on domestic policy as we move closer to the midterm elections. It's very difficult for Trump to declare victory if oil prices stay above 100. That's very clear. So I think the kind of commitment goes more internally, and we see hopefully a bit less of geopolitical stress going forward.
Yeah, I would agree with Dirk on this. It's a great point that he raises. I wish I could offer a different or a separate option, but let me just maybe add a few other points. This summer, the president is going to be focused on celebrating the 250th birthday of the U.S. His attention may shift back to North America and domestic political considerations. We have the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Free Trade Agreement, which is under review this summer. That could create its own fireworks, but for the U.S. to be embroiled in a lengthy Iran campaign deep into the summer would likely not sit well at home. And it's hard for Republicans to campaign on affordability. This is to Dirk's point, if U.S. gasoline prices are higher than when Trump took office. And also thinking about the next several months, this conflict in Iran would also expose a wedge between the U.S. and China. And they're planning to sit down at an important summit in April. And that summit's important to the president. So I think that's another... This is just another list of factors that suggests that the administration may turn more inward and more domestic, and that these geopolitical threats may subside for a period of time.
Okay, amazing. Thank you to our speakers and listeners for joining today's podcast. As a reminder, we can discuss specific securities on these podcasts, but you can explore some of these ideas further with your UBS representative. But to sum up, the market impact of geopolitical shocks is typically short-lived unless they escalate into broader economic disruptions. Historically, making hasty decisions to exit risk assets during such periods has not been a winning strategy, and we don't expect this episode to be an exception. Provided the conflict remains brief, we believe attention will shift back to solid long-term fundamentals, including resilient economic growth and strong earnings momentum. We'll be back soon with another installment of Across the Pond, and in the meantime, have a great week.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.